Well, with the New South Wales state election over, attention is turning to the federal poll, expected to be held on May the 11th. And while the Morrison government will take some heart, as we heard the Prime Minister earlier, from Gladys Berejiklian's historic win on Saturday, the polling suggests the coalition will enter this contest well behind federal Labor. One seat up for grabs is the Sydney seat of Reid, held by former Workplace Minister Craig Launday. Craig Launday has announced he's quitting politics after last year's bruising leadership coup, which tore down his close friend and ally, Malcolm Turnbull. Craig Launday joins me in the Breakfast studio for his first broadcast interview since he announced that decision. Craig Launday, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran, and morning to your listeners.
You're quitting politics after just 6 years in Parliament, which is not a long time. You are citing family as the reason for leaving. But how much of your decision was also driven by the removal of Malcolm Turnbull, but you readily admit took a massive toll on you personally?
Yeah, look, it did, Fran, but that wasn't the consideration. The consideration, and I said this in the statement I released a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half ago, it really was family reasons. My path to politics was a little unusual. I'm an accidental politician, I guess you could say. I was never going to stay in it for ages, because I had a career to get back to, but challenges that the family had been faced with over the past 12 months, put me in a position where it was the right decision for me and the family.
So it wasn't the anger and the brutality of that leadership coup, because you did feel bruised after that?
Yeah, but you're right, at the time, definitely. But no, this very much was, and Prime Minister Morrison, upon taking the role, we chatted early and I told him that I was in some doubt, and we continued chatting along the way, and when I did make the decision, he was extremely supportive of that.
You said that you've seen, quote, the worst of politics in the heat of battle. The thing that surprised me was the minute my teammates knew Malcolm was gone, they left. I think what you're saying there was they abandoned Malcolm Turnbull and switched their support to Scott Morrison. Only 6 years in politics, you were never going to be a career politician, as you said, but do you leave politics with a pretty dim view of politicians and how self-serving?
No.
They can be?
No, I'm really glad I did it, and I thank Mike Baird for challenging me to do it, who was my motivation. Because I got to see how tough the gig really is, and I think this gets missed a lot. And in the decision for me, realistically for the past 6 years, a member of parliament, especially a marginal seat holder, you end up putting the constituents ahead of your family. And the longer you do that, obviously, the less sustainable that becomes. But I'll give you a real-life example. In December, I was still probably undecided, you could say, leaning one way, but my daughter, Annalise, had her school assembly on, and we as members of parliament go to those assemblies as often as we can that time of year. It's a great, happy time to see people and say good day. Hers was a school that would predominantly vote for me, and at the same time there was a school in a swing zone of the electorate that were having their end of year assembly. So what do I do, and this is not peculiar to me, it's what members of parliament do, and no one ever sees this, is I decline the invitation to go and watch my daughter get her awards, and I go and spend my time with the students and their parents at the swing zone, in the hope that at the next election, that interaction and that continuing to develop a bond with the community will get them to vote for me. And that gets largely missed.
What did your daughter think of that?
They've become used to it. My family have become used to it. As I would argue, MPs' families end up, as Tony Abbott once famously said, we're volunteers, the members of parliament. The families are the conscripts. And it was just a situation where after 6 years of putting the family second and the people of Reid first, it was time for me to reevaluate based on challenges that we'd been confronted with.
You are the seventh minister or former minister to announce retirement before this at the next election, which creates, even if you and others say there's nothing to do with this, creates the perception of rats deserting a sinking ship. Do you believe there would have been such an exodus if there hadn't been the leadership change, which really, really wrecked the coalition, the opinion polls in the short term, the much talked about transactional costs of dumping a leader?
Look, obviously that's a hypothetical. Short answer is I probably don't know. My gut feel and it would be that no, you probably wouldn't have seen as many go. However, it's a hypothetical, so you don't really know. However, what I will say, and I've heard Arthur and Tony before me this morning, Tony Burke and Arthur Sinodinos, talk about the New South Wales state election and the results there. I think you can read some things into that in seats like Banks and Reid, and as Arthur said, potentially Lindsay. And I obviously want to congratulate Gladys and her team. And Tony alluded to this. I think Labor in Sydney are in a tough position, especially state-based, even moving forward, because a lot of the infrastructure that the state and federal Liberal governments have invested in over the past, 6 years, you'll start to see that opening. I mean, in my electorate of Reid, WestConnex is due to open next month, stage two, and then by stage three, we'll be open before the next state election. So do you think
federal Libs are going to get a bounce for that?
Yes, I do, because we've worked with our state colleagues in the cities, and I'm obviously not statewide. You can't draw statewide implications from this. I'm just talking key marginal seats. David Coleman's seat, he's the other side of the puzzle, the M5 and linking to the M4 stage three, and there's a lot of work going on in his electorate. And, whilst it's not sexy in delivery, infrastructure, and this was one of the issues that Gladys confronted, it is sexy in opening and using. And in the next 4 years, you'll start to see big projects open and running, as I say, WestConnex as soon as next month.
Do you think you would have won the upcoming election, if Malcolm Turnbull was still Prime Minister?
Yes, but I believe that we can still win the upcoming election with Scott Morrison as Prime Minister.
But if you could have won with Malcolm Turnbull, what was the point?
I don't know is the answer to that question. And I argued strongly, obviously, not to make the change.
Insanity prevails is
Obviously, I've spoken a lot about this in the heat of that week and the environment that was there. Strong personalities involved and differences of opinions, and the result is history. However, that doesn't change the fact that we now have Prime Minister Morrison and we work tirelessly between now and polling day to make sure, for the sake of the country, that he and the coalition government are returned.
The result is history, and I know you want to sort of move on, but the result is history, but the Liberal Party is changed, isn't it? I mean, you're a moderate. Many of the other leading small-L Liberals are leaving too. Julie Bishop is leaving, Christopher Pyne is leaving, Kelly O'Dwyer is leaving. Does this election mark a real change in the makeup of the coalition party room and, overstating it to call it the death of the Liberal moderates, but certainly the ascendance, clear-cut ascendance of the right, of the Conservatives in the party room?
Look, it depends. Obviously, that will depend on results, but I'm not sure of what candidates are chosen Australia-wide to replace those people that you've mentioned that are leaving and what alliances they have or history they have inside the party. So it's not my area of expertise to comment extensively on that. But what I will say is, again, I think Gladys has shown, demonstrated very clearly and before her Mike and before that Barry, that the best way for us as a party to appeal to the voter is, and New South Wales is the best example of this, is when the conservative side and the moderate side work together.
Yes, now, but where are the signs of that? This party room is going to be depleted of the moderates. That's the point. It's a numbers game,
no,
right?
No, friend, I don't know. I don't know because I don't know, as I say, who's replacing and who will get elected and what their alliances are. I don't want to comment when I clearly don't know that.
Okay.
But what I will say is that, we need to, if we are to take lessons out of the New South Wales result, when you get the key personalities in New South Wales politics, which both state and federal, people like Matt Keane, Dom Perrottet, David Elliott, Gladys, when they all work together, Gladys at the top of the tree, but those three strongly supporting her right across the party, it's when we're at our most dangerous, because we can concentrate on delivering economic stability and management and results for the state and obviously the country.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. It's 8:15. Our guest is Craig Launder. He's the outgoing Liberal member for the Sydney seat of Reid. Until you came along in 2013, your seat of Reid was Labor heartland in Sydney's inner west. You hold it by a margin of 4.7. The Liberal Party still doesn't have a replacement candidate, with the election now less than 2 months away. We know of two people who have approached, Nick Kaldos, a former Deputy Police Commissioner. He said no. ABC broadcaster Stan Grant, he said no. I could ask you why the party is having so much trouble finding a replacement, but I really want to know is, do you think they should select a woman?
Oh, look, that's a matter for the rank and file.
What's your view, though? It's your seat.
Yeah.
And it's a party you're a part of, and there's very few women in your party room.
It'd be sanctimonious of me to sit there and preach to the rank and file who they should select. I think they should select the best candidate for the job. And I know that, you say those names have been mentioned in the mix, as approached and spoken to, who who they choose is a matter for them. And then once they choose them, you know, I've got to work with them between now and the next election.
Just in terms of the wake of the Christchurch terror attack,
yep.
Your seat of Reid is one of the most multicultural seats in the country. It's got, I think, 10% Muslim constituency within your seat, I think.
Not anymore. So up until the 2016 redistribution, it did. So I spent 3 years with a strong local Islamic community. Lost that in 2016. However, still extremely well connected to that, you know, great local Muslim community.
How difficult was it for you, given some of the sentiments that have come out of your party, the mouths of senior ministers in your party and other members of your party, that by any description could be called Islamophobic?
Look, I'm not aware of senior ministers, and what I do know and what I saw firsthand was that the day that happened, I spoke to Scott and I said, listen, do you want to come out to the Lakemba Mosque, meet with senior Islamic leadership and you know, put their minds at ease, which is exactly what we did do the next day.
And yeah, but there's a leaked video of that visit to the mosque, and it shows the Grand Mufti questioning the PM's commitment to protecting Muslim people. He told Scott Morrison the attack didn't come out of nowhere. Quote, it's been something that's been built up over the last few years because of the incitement of hatred, bigotry and discrimination against the Islamic community.
Yeah, but he was talking about the community more broadly, not politically, but then challenging us to take that head on. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously very topical, Scott's and Waleed's interview last week. But, you know, I've spent 6 years with Scott. The relationships he has inside, particularly Sydney's Islamic community, are extremely strong. Extremely strong. And, you know, for anyone to attempt to paint him, you know, in any way supportive of Islamophobia is absolutely out of bounds, because I've seen firsthand the relationships he's built, the respect predominantly for him through his time as Minister for Social Services, because he was in charge of countering violent extremism. He worked very extensively, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne's Islamic communities, because that's where the majority of the problems we're confronting with ISIS and Daesh, if you like, were coming.
He's the leader of the Liberal Party. Should he be directing the Liberal Party to put One Nation last?
Look, no, he shouldn't, because that's not his decision to make. That'll be made by the state branches of the party. That's the way our party is set up.
Should he be saying, as the leader of the Liberal Party, I will be putting One Nation last in my electorate?
He may have an opinion on that, may want to say something.
Do you want to see the Liberal Party put One Nation last?
Look, I wouldn't be keen, and again, in my seat of Reid, as the former member, I wouldn't be keen to see, you know, One Nation supported in any way, because I disagree with the majority of things that come out of One Nation candidates' mouths.
Craig Launday, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Craig Launday, former Workplace Relations Minister and the Liberal member for Reid, the outgoing Liberal member for Reid.